play for yourself at the beginning. It doesn't matter if the Boomkin CDs are coming in. They're like, oh, pull big, I have 3 minutes. Whatever it takes for you to live first. I have work, I have my family. I already have a schedule built out. I'll maybe play the game 50% of the time, and the 50% of the time off stream, I'll be routing.
Playing what you like to play versus, let's say, playing the meta spec.
I was like, okay, look, I'll do my prop paladin. It's my undergeared ult, but look, I'll show you that it's not worth it for me to switch paladin. That key, when you one-shot it and got the world first Temple of the Jade Serpent, that was the start of my villain arc. It really only matters in keys that you're of the 1% of that 1%. If you want IO is one answer, and if you want to get better, it's another answer. A couple of times I've had to bench a couple of friends. I think if you're looking for a long-term teammate, you cannot fix attitude. Gameplay can kind of be taught. This is the nature of high keys. You're going to hit a point where you are failing probably 80% of the keys. What is raging on them going to do for you, right? Are you going to feel better? No, you still failed the key. Are they going to feel better? No. And if you yell at them, they're not going to do better.
Okay, I have problems holding threat. What advice do you have for me?
You know, if the DPS pulls before you do, or they blast first, dude, you just got let him die.
Welcome back to the weekly MMO podcast. Unplugged. Very special guest today. We have Pika. And, you know, I've actually started watching his content in, I think, Shadowlands Season 1. And he was like the top prop warrior tank back then. One of the, you know, top M plus tanks ever since then. I know you're always top of the leaderboard in the world. So why don't I turn it over to you, Pika? Why don't you talk about a bit of your accolades M plus wise and when you raid and whatnot?
Yeah, of course. Hey guys, I'm Pika TV. I'm one of the top NA Mythic Plus tanks, usually around the top 10, top 5 area for all tanks in general. I usually specialize in Protection Warrior, but you know, depending on the season and how rough it is to be there, I usually multi-class tank. This season specifically, I've been playing a lot of Vengeance Demon Hunter. Previous season, you know, Druid and Prop Paladin. But I always kind of keep the Warrior in tow, you know, make sure that I never get that too rusty, but always keep it up to date. I stream on twitch.tv/PikaTV. I do a lot of high Mythic Plus content, as long with helping newer players kind of get into Mythic Plus and understand it, as well as do a lot of casting on the side and guides on YouTube. So yeah, thank you for having me.
And you already have a lot of things that we can dive into, including how, you know, prop warrior is your love, but sometimes you kind of play the meta spec too, and I would love to kind of dive into that later. But let's start with the basics first. You know, I think for Mythic Plus, a lot of people say that tanking is the most stressful role by far. I would love to kind of get your take on this, like your advice for people who are interested in tanking in Mythic Plus, but they're afraid to start. What kind of advice would you give people like that?
I think the advice kind of comes down to something that kind of hurts home in real life for me. So I kind of treat it a lot like cooking. Mm. Okay. So when you start cooking, you're going to suck. There's nobody who starts and just like, I am a genius at cooking. You know, you're going to suck. You're going to burn like 100 dishes. You're going to like mess it up. It's going to taste awful. But you know, you still got to eat it. Mm. Right. So similar to like Mythic Plus, you are going to be terrible at the start, but that's just part of the journey, right? You're gonna be terrible at the start, and you're gonna fail, you know, every key at least once, and you're gonna make every mistake once. But that's the goal, right? You need to have the experience to make those mistakes and be okay making those mistakes, because you once you make them once, you're gonna try at least to never make those same ones again, right? And every tank goes through this. The reason why you see the high Mythic Plus on stream, like maybe they play a lot better, or maybe they don't make as many mistakes, is because they have made those mistakes, right? We have all died to, you know, the first pull in Throne of the Tides. We've all died to, you know, like trying to pull massives, seeing the things that we see other people do. But that's just part of it, right? Whether they do it off stream or on stream, you'll see that journey, or if you don't see the journey, rather, they all have to go through that in order to get in there. So don't feel scared to get into that, and don't feel scared to deplete. That's just part of the journey, and that's how you just become a better player and a better tank in the long run.
So let me ask you about that, diving deeper to what you said. I think a lot of people say that, yeah, I understand I had to put in the hard work, but it's the idea of, you know, getting flamed in pucks because I pulled the wrong mobs together, or, you know, I didn't time the key because I pulled too conservatively. What do you say to people like that? What's like the kind of mental game that's required to deal with, you know, having to deal with like toxicity when you start off as a tank, right? Like, what would you say to people like that?
Yeah, of course. I think that comes a lot from people seeing how other people pull. Like they look at like Now, for instance, and they'll be like, oh man, that guy pulls this whole room. I'm going to go do that, right? And then they just die, right? But that's not part of the progression, right? Like now pulled like maybe the first three mobs, and then he added the next two, and then he added the next two, right? But it was like slowly doing it rather than pulling it all at once and just expecting to live. Mm-hmm. But I think I was talking to my friend Andy Brew, right? Like we talk some here and there, and he was talking the other day about how does he learn a new tank and how does he kind of get into it in Mythic Plus. And one thing that he says really well is that play for yourself at the beginning, right? It doesn't matter if the Boomkin CDs are coming up, they're like, oh, pull big, I have 3 minutes, right? Or the Shadow Priest is like, I have Power Infusion, you better pull big. No, play whatever it takes for you to live first. And like, okay, if you feel comfortable pulling this, pull this, right? Because there's like a lot of comps out there who don't pull like MDI style, right? But they pull consistently and safe, but they keep trucking along very quickly throughout the dungeon. And it matters more that you live and you survive every pull than it is that you do giant pulls that you see other people do to get time. Because ultimately you lose the most time when you die and everything gets flustered and everything gets messed up. I think a huge example of this in NA this season that they have done super well with is Squish Vegan's comp, which is a Guardian Druid comp, which is like, you know, everyone's like, Guardian Druid is terrible. How are they doing this? And they're playing Guardian Druid double rogue warrior with a Mistweaver healer. And that's like, okay, well, these specs were all considered terrible. How can they do like the highest keys in the world right now? And that's just because they pull very small, but they pull fast. And they pull five mobs, three mobs at a time consistently because, you know, they're target capped at like five mobs. But then again, to deal with the toxicity, you know, you just kind of brush it off. Look, if you want to straight up tell people, hey, I'm going to pull this, I'm going to pull consistently, but I'm also, you know, I'm learning here and there. People, I feel, are less likely to flame you if you kind of be upfront with it. But if you kind of ego and be like, I'm going to pull big and then die, that's the problem. But if you're pulling safe, but something wrong happens, people are more understanding in that position.
That's great advice. And I like to kind of talk more about the idea of like, we have all played fire mages in the past, and we play with people with like, you know, they play around their big cooldowns, right? And they are egging the tank on to pull big. And I think what you mentioned about the conversation with Andy, I think that hits home because sometimes as a tank, you're supposed to lead the group, and sometimes you're just being in control of the situation. But I like to ask you, for people who, you know, like the people who are in your group and they're DPS players and they feel like, oh yes, you're not pulling aggressive enough, even though you are in the phase where you're still learning like your cooldowns and whatnot, do you think that maybe those are not the kind of players that you want to play in the long run? Like, you know, how do you think about picking up players that you're comfortable with as a tank? Because I know you run with a certain crew on your streams too. So what are some of the attributes you look for in DPS players?
Ultimately, I've had quite a lot of experience. I was first picked up by a real like push team all the way back in BFA. And since then, I've gone through maybe like five or six long-term teams while doing High Mythic Plus. And there's a lot of factors that actually go into the people that you kind of want to play with. I think the first and foremost is you want to like the people you're playing with and make sure that you have fun. Because at the core of it, you guys are grinding like, you know, 3, 5, 7 hour sessions sometimes when you're doing Mythic Plus. And if at the root of it, if you're not having fun, you are going to not have a good time. And you're going to burn out super fast and like very unenjoyable experience. That's first, right? And then secondly, you want people who are self-sufficient and be able to be very autonomous on their own, but at the same time, be able to listen to any calls that you make. And this kind of goes into like, we can talk a little bit later about like the shot caller role and the support roles within the group. But ultimately, you want people ideally who can do their role completely autonomously, that you don't need to tell them what to do, but be able to follow the roles that you kind of set for them as the shot caller or the tank in the run. Mm.
And let me ask you a bit deeper about that. And we'll come back to the shot caller, you know, point that you brought up. So I asked Alice Mir the same question, and I thought I got quite an interesting response, but he's a healer, so I want to hear from a tank. Mm. You know, a lot of DPS players, their ego is tied to the amount of numbers they put up. And what would you say for people who are building an M+ push team, right? Like when they're trialing a new DPS player, is there certain attributes they need to look for other than their ability to put in big numbers? What would you say as a tank?
I would say that you kind of look to how world first guilds and rated high like Hoth guilds run. Your DPS is there. It is a component of your play, but it's kind of the expected part already, right? It is not the part you look for because everyone at that level is doing high DPS. What you want to look for is there synergy with the player that you are playing with, right? Do they look out for the things that you're already missing? Like, for instance, let's say Fire Mage. They aren't people, right? They aren't people. Let's be real.
Okay.
But they are people who play, they have to play super greedy in order to do high damage. They have to be super, you know, like all about themselves so that they can do big damage. And they also are the person who are egging the tank on the most to, you know, pull big, I have combust. Pull big, I have this. And this is every season, right? This is something that's like every season. But essentially, when the DPS players that are playing at the highest level, they're the people who are looking at how can I use my entire toolkit to our advantage, especially this season, right? The top mages aren't the people like topping the highest damage meter because everyone's doing that. They're the people who are, where how can I utilize Ring of Frost the best to prevent any damage from killing the team? How can I use my DB? How can I use my Blast Wave? But, and most of all, how do I use my Mass Barrier, right? Because that's in a one-shot meta, that's what matters the most, right? Like having a mage that can use all their utility and having any DPS in general use all their utility to the maximum of their ability, that's what separates a really good DPS teammate versus someone that maybe you just pick up in LFG.
Great advice. And let's talk about something, I think even a closer knit relationship, which is a tank and the healer kind of relationship, right? And a lot of tanks, they run with a certain pocket healer that they've built a good kind of synergy with over time. Tell us, how do you think about, you know, the healers that you run with? Like, what do you look for? What do you communicate about? What are some of the tips you can give people here?
The most thing I look for right now is, I used to it's a change over the years, but the thing I look at the most right now is consistency, right? Consistency and good attitude. You can't have a healer that tilts. Like, I think all the best healers in the world, they have such a good attitude, right? They're not the people who are like, what the heck? Why is this happening? Like, or why are you standing in stuff? They're not, right? They're the people who are like, oh, you died? I tried my best. You know, they brush it off because they realize that, you know, is not major, like a lot of the problems when people die, it's not really their fault because there's not a lot of rot fights, right? There is, oh, the DPS didn't hit their cooldown, well, they died, right? The tank did this bad pull, they died, right? The healer, it's not like people joke all the time that they are cosmetic, right? But they are not exactly cosmetic. They are supplementary to the cause of why you died, right? Yeah, they are there to fix people's mistakes a lot of the time. Oh, you're standing in fire, well, I'll fix that, right? And it kind of helps people do that, and they're there a lot for their utility toolkit as long as with their big healer CDs. But essentially, I want someone when I'm looking for a healer is that someone that's a really good attitude, very light, and doesn't tilt, right? Because everything else can kind of be fixed. You can kind of help them. You can kind of work through it as a team. But as long as you have someone with a really good positive mental attitude, you kind of get it in the long run.
Right. Okay. So now we know your perspective of DPS and healers in kind of the set group that you run with. What do you think about the shot caller role that you brought up earlier? Should it always be the tank? It seems like on a lot of streams, sometimes it's the tank, but although you have Jinji who calls stuff, but what's your take on this?
I think it's a huge NA problem. because EU, I think like some of the best players, like I've seen like Thanner, for instance, like when he was on healer in previous seasons, he would shot call like so many different things. And don't get me wrong, the EU tanks can shot call, and they do in some moments where, like, you know, they need to, whether it's like kick stops or whatever. But tanking in a lot of the seasons, especially the highest keys, is such a stressful moment when you're pulling very big and when your back is turned and you're trying to like pull other mobs and group them properly, that it's hard to shot call really, really well. I think it's something that I don't recommend the tank to do, but at the same time, it's something the tank kind of has to do in a lot of situations. And that's because unless you're in a very set group, like exactly everyone plays with the other all the time, it's impossible for anyone else to really shot call in that situation because they don't know what you're pulling.
Right.
Right. Unless like most people don't actually even open the MDT if you link it. Right. And they look at it and like, oh yeah, I know what you're doing. It's something similar. And then when they actually see the pull, they're like, oh crap, Okay, yeah. Let's focus up. But the tech really knows already what their whole entire route is before the pull even starts. So it is something that NA is kind of weaker in, like where DPS don't really do it. I think Nerf's group did really well in past seasons when JPC was calling for them, right? They were excelling super hard. I think Shot Caller is like one of the most important things you can have in high Mythic Plus. And I would love to see a lot of more DPS players and healer people take up that role. And that is probably the best thing if you want to get into high Mythic Plus. If you can Shot Call, you will go super far, regardless of how good your DPS is or how good your play is. If you can Shot Call, that's like plus 500 IO right there.
Fair enough. Easily. Okay. As a fellow tank player, I feel your pain because like there's so much shit to worry about already and you still got to call kicks and stuff. So I feel your pain and hopefully more people hear your advice. That's great stuff. And we'll circle back to a bit more about like team synergies and comp. But I kind of want to go back to earlier what you said when you started this conversation. And you talked about how, you know, obviously you're the best known prop warrior tank in M+. But you have also come, you know, sometimes you play the meta spec. In this case, in this season, you're playing Vengeance Demon Hunter. So kind of tell us, how do you view the idea of playing what you like to play? Like, you know, Squeeze Vegan, obviously playing Bear. And they are doing well versus, let's say, playing the meta spec. How do you view the trade-offs? And does it matter if you're pushing high keys or low keys? Like, you know, what kind of different takes will you have if you're giving different advice to people who are pushing the highest keys versus, you know, people who are just doing Mythic Plus?
No, for sure. To start off, I was a Prot Warrior, like, main person all the way until really Dragonflight. Like, I was just playing Prot Warrior no matter what was happening. And that's because, like, that was my specialty. I didn't really want to reach out too much into other fields because I didn't have that familiarity with the other tanks. And what happened to me specifically was in Season 1, I was playing nothing but Prot Warrior, and we were struggling a little bit with Temple of the Jade Serpent, right? And people, my teammates will always be like, oh, man, if you were a Prot Paladin, this would be so much easier. If you were Blood DK, this would be so much easier.
The Jade Liu Hunt boss, yeah.
I was like, come on, guys. It's not that bad. We can just play better, right? We can just play better. And how I went was, like, I told my team, okay, you know what? Fine. If you don't think so? No problem. I'll show you how bad, like, how much it doesn't really matter, right? Okay. I'll log on to my Prot Paladin, and we'll do, like, at the time was, like, the highest Jade Serpent key in the world, right? I was like, okay, look, I'll do my Prot Paladin. It's my undergeared alt, but, you know, look, I'll show you that it's not worth it for me to switch Paladin. That key, when you one-shot it and got the world's first Temple of the Jade Serpent when I played Prot Paladin for the first time.
So what do you have to say about that? Like, were you wrong then?
I was like, okay, that was the start of my villain arc where I started playing the meta tanks season.
Okay.
And it was, once I made that mistake, I could never go back. And the problem with that was my teammates never let me kind of live it down. They were like, oh, you thought Prot Warrior was fine. Now look, and we do every single season now. You know, we start with Prot Warrior because that's what I raid on in Mythic Raid. So I actually always start with Prot Warrior. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the season, I'm usually playing whatever the meta tank is because it takes time to gear up and kind of get used to it. But the how I exactly feel about it now is that it really only matters in keys that you're of the 1% of that 1%, right? The top of the top. That's where it really matters, because today you're looking at the top keys in the world are like the 33, the 32s in the world. But Prot Warrior can do 31s, right? And they're considered to be the worst tank in this whole expansion, right? Like, they're the worst tank right now, and they can do 31s. But the thing is, it's just harder, right? You have to play better. You have to play crisper. You cannot make as many mistakes as if you were playing the VDH, right, of the Prot Paladins. And it's not that it's not possible. It's just a lot harder on your entire team, right? You don't go into a pack and you can silent sigil a pack for like 20, 30 seconds and stop it all by yourself. You know, you have budget silent sigil in Disrupting Shout, right? Like, you have the budget version of everything and you can make it work and you can just utilize your team a lot better, but it's just a lot harder. And in the end of the day, it's not as pug friendly, but it's doable, right? And you always would rather take a 90 percentile protection warrior than a 30 percentile Vengeance Demon Hunter, right? You should always play what you love and what you're best at, unless you're trying to go for the 1% of the 1%.
Right.
And you can make it work, right? Like, all the, like I said, the Squish Vegans that are out there are owning on the ladder. the reloads, the equinoxes, you know, are owning it in their whatever the respective fields, because it's doable. It's just harder, right? And if you really love the class, you can make it work.
Makes sense. And you mentioned, you know, Dragonfly is where you really started your villain arc. I love that description. But let's talk more about that. Because I think a lot of people, they start off with a specific spec. And, you know, there's a part of them that feels, okay, I want to try something new. I want to try a new tank. As someone who has kind of gone into Prop Paladin and then Vengeance Demon Hunter on the highest keys recently, what advice do you have for people who are trying to learn a new tank spec? What goes through your head when you are in that position? Like, what are some of the building blocks that you look at?
The thing I do is I always play for safety at the beginning. So the tanks who are doing the high, even like how I feel now when I'm playing Vengeance Demon Hunter, because this is my first season ever playing Vengeance Demon Hunter. So I'm pretty green in this regard. And last season was the first time I'd ever played Bear at all. Right. So you should always play the most, I would say, the most safe builds first. And then practice all the keys with that safe build and slowly make it to the builds that you see in the top keys in Raider.io. Because those people are already used to the keys. Let's say Demon Hunter, specifically this season. Demon Spike uptime is like a huge thing for Vengeance Demon Hunter specifically. But all the top builds don't exactly play with like 100% Demon Spike's uptime. Right? They play with like 60, 70%, and then they fill it with like Feldev and Metamorphosis. But at the beginning, you should just probably play the builds where you have 100% demon spike uptime, because you're just not used to it, right? And if you just go into a large pool and you don't know how to handle your mitigation properly, you're just going to flop, right? Demon Hunter is one of those builds where you are they look super strong, super tanky, super owning in every category. But if you just like run into a pack and you don't know how to handle your mitigation, you will just flop in like 2 seconds. Right? So always play safe. Like let's say you're playing Protection Warrior for the first time. I don't know why you would be playing Protection Warrior, but you know, if you want to go for it, you freaking go for it. You should start in defensive stance, right? There's a lot of people who will play in battle stance because it does more damage. They know how to handle like their CDs and defenses and then use defensive as more of like a CD rather than being in all the time. But you should really play in defensive stance and then kind of, oh, I can go, like, I didn't take too much damage this pull. I should then play battle stance, right? Like, and then try it a little bit by bit. But don't go in all gung-ho, like, doing top damage. First and foremost, as a tank player, you should be worried about your survivability. If you can survive the entire key and you still failed it, well, unless you're doing the top key in the world, there's probably a lot of other bigger problems, right, than whatever happened there. So I would say, you know, start very defensive, pull wherever you feel comfortable, and kind of slowly kind of get into it that way. And you will get good at any tank role, because your job is to live and pull. And once you can do that as a basis, you know, you'll do fine in the long run.
Right. That's great advice. And speaking about learning new things, I think as a new tank to Mythic Plus, a lot of people also face this kind of very intimidating task of planning the route. And, you know, a lot of people will criticize your routes and whatnot. And like, why are you doing this pull? This pull is not efficient. What advice do you give new tanks when it comes to learning Mythic Plus, like routing? And yeah, how would you think about that if you're a new tank?
Okay, well, I hate this part of the job because Mythic Plus routing is like so volatile. You can feel like you have the best route and then tomorrow, you know, this guy does something crazy and it's the better route.
Yep.
I think this season, China has been insane. China or the Taiwanese servers, they have just been insane because they have been doing the highest high keys. And every day I feel like I wake up to like,
yep.
Why is that possible? Or now like the big meta is 4 DPS at the start of the key and you go 4 DPS until like the point where they can't survive. And then the guy zones out, goes back healer. And that's something like Taiwan servers have done like crazy good with. You shout out to you guys, innovation and it's purist. But like how I do it is I'll maybe play the game like 50% of the time, and the 50% of the time off stream, I'll be routing. And it's like, it's such a tedious and grinding task. And it's something that the tank really is responsible for. Like yesterday I had a conversation with my shadow priest in the group. I was like, why don't you go learn the tech? Why do I have to go and do your homework for you?
Yep.
And he's like, well, you're watching the VODs anyways, you know, you're doing the work. Just tell me what I need to do, right? It's like awful that the tech has to go and watch tons and tons of VODs. But honestly, that's what I do, right? Like when I'm not playing the game, I have a Twitch stream on or like whatever YouTube video on. And I'm like, okay, I take my MDT open on the other screen. I'm watching YouTube or Twitch on this stream and I'm just routing. whatever they're doing, I'm just copying it, right? And that's something as an early player you can do is just copy, right? Like first, you can do things that you feel comfortable, but you can copy from whatever the best routes are. But don't just do what they're doing. You can see, oh, they're doing this huge pull. Well, let's split it up into two pulls, right? Especially if you're an off-meta tank and you're not the best tank. You see the Vengeance Demon Hunter, oh, they pulled like four or five packs together. Okay, let's do a three pull and let's do a two pull, right? And as you feel more comfortable, try to combine it. But take what other people are doing because it's super efficient. But obviously, your classes, what you do matter. Like if they're pulling like a 10 caster pack, but you don't have Silent Sigil, well, good luck, buddy. You're dead. Like there's no way you can do it. Like take in consideration their composition. But if it's something that you see like other people doing, like if you're a prot warrior and you are looking for a prot warrior route, go look for the top prot warrior, right? Go look for the top druid. Don't try to copy a Vengeance Demon Hunter route for a Vengeance Demon Hunter. You copy like whatever the top person is in your class. Yeah. Unless you're the top of your class, right? Like the top prot warrior has to then go look at the top VDH and see how they can adapt and innovate, right? But if you're like a, you know, 100 prot warrior and you can look at the top two, three people and you can see what they're doing, just copy. It's so much easier and so much better, like time efficiency than trying to innovate on your own.
Yeah, I'm starting to see why you're a great coach on your stream, because I like the analogy you gave about like if they did a five pool, you can split it up into three and two and you can slowly add. And I think that's like a step-by-step kind of, you step up in difficulty and you learn as a new tank. And that's perfect advice. Speaking about advice, I think a lot of people getting into the Mythic class and they're starting to do higher and higher keys and parks. And we're talking about parks now. So there's no voice comms, right? There's no voice comms of your healers and your group. Let's say you're doing a key on stream, right? It's not the highest of keys in the world, but it's still a relatively high key. What's your mentality as a tank going into a park where there's no voice comms and you're doing it on a stream? Like, yeah, how would you think about things differently?
I always play for safety when I'm playing with pugs. Never expect somebody to do something that is like outside control. Obviously, if you're pulling something that needs like a very important kick, you focus that kick, right? Like when I'm let's see Waycrest Manor, for instance, and there's a Soul Charmer that spawns, right? There's like a lot of bolts going off, but as the tank and the router, I'm always thinking, okay, well, I'm going to just kick the most important thing. And if people don't kick the other stuff, well, they're just going to die. Right. I mean, it's just the circumstance is how it is when you're doing a pug, but you play for safety, right? Don't pull like the Soul Charmer with four other kicks. That takes a lot of coordination, even though you see other people do that. And even if you do that normally in your group, because those people aren't expecting it, right? They're probably also thinking, well, I should probably also kick the most important kick, right? So you want to play in a role where if things go awful, you can still recover it. Or if you can handle it, majority of it on your own,
right?
And this is something that applies a lot to like Demon Hunter specifically, because you can lock down a pack yourself for 30 seconds. But even when I play Prot Warrior, I'm like, okay, as long as I can deal with the majority of these mechanics, we should still time the key. Because like I said before, timing the key is majority on can your whole group survive and just progress slowly throughout the entire key, rather than you trying to do something crazy and then wipe over it. Because if you wipe, that's where you rip the keys. It's not really ripping the keys because you made it all the way through. If you think of it as your own player, no matter what key level you're doing, if you don't wipe throughout the whole key, how often do you actually fail the key, right? It's like a very rare thing, but people feel like, I have to go, I have to pull, I have to do all these different things, whether they're in a pug circumstance or in a team circumstance. But you just don't rush, you take it patiently, and you should always be good in that regard.
Right. Great advice. Speaking about kind of thinking about your role as a tank, a lot of people also associate, you know, role as a tank as being able to hold threat, right? And that's inevitably linked kind of to your damage output. A lot of people, like when they start playing with better and better DPS players, that becomes a real problem, like holding threat. And this might be, you know, throughout the different expansions, a problem with the coefficient around threat, and people have been kind of complaining about that. But, you know, given our current tools, what's the best advice you'll give tanks with regards to like, okay, I have problems holding threat. What advice do you have for me?
Oh, I'm straight up the Darwinism. You know, if the DPS pulls before you do, or they blast first, dude, you just gotta let them die.
Fair. They gotta learn, dude. They gotta learn. Yeah. I respect that. Yep.
You know what? You know, it's not so much like, you know, you pull it, you tank it kind of mentality that you have like in classic days, but it's honestly like if the DPS are going gung-ho, like you can try to help as much as you can, but ultimately if they pulled aggro at the start of a pull before you were able to set up properly, it's kind of something that is like their problem in a way. And like like you can only do the best ability but that you can, but when you have to try to reactively deal with aggro problems like 5 seconds into the pull and you die because of it, it's because like you're over trying to compensate for them, right? Because like there's a lot of setup things that you have to do as a tank in order to be sustainable during your pull. And if you're worrying that, oh, I need to run over here and taunt this, and I need to make sure that guy doesn't have this, it's just gonna end up in you dying. And then in a way, you will inversely get flamed, right? Like it's your fault that you died, even though that it was like a DPS problem. Like I said, this is kind of goes back to play for your own safety as much as possible, and then try to worry for everybody else, right? And if you need time to like set up a big pull, like, feel free to like stop in the middle of the key. I know it's a timed event and you have to time the key, but go out in chat and be like, hey, I'm pulling big, just hold off for 5 seconds as I group, or I'm pulling really big here, just hold up until they're grouped and then pull, right? And this is something that even if you need to set up like kicks for the pull and a really important pull, like type it in chat, let people like have a second to deal with it. It's more important that you do it cleanly than you do it like, you know, all rushed and then everyone pulling aggro here and there. But and I know understand that aggro is kind of a problem this season specifically, but every season in its own way. Like VDDH, for instance, has a problem where unless you're already in combat, your sigils and like anything that you do doesn't actually generate any threat. So you can hit them with like, you know, an Elysian Decree, a Flame Sigil, but it actually does like zero threat. And if your team dots it ahead of time, they're just screwed, right? So like if especially in a puck situation, what I do is I just pull slower, right? I'll go into the pack, immolation, get 2 GCDs, then chain, and then chain, and then chain, rather than pull it all at once like I would do in a like a group concept. But ultimately, like at the end of the day, if DPS are going ham and they're making it too difficult because they can't hold it, you know what? I'm sorry, buddy. You're gonna learn today.
Yep, that's how you learn. That's how you train them. Good advice.
Yeah, you train them.
Good advice. I feel like a lot of the things that you've said so far, it's really helpful for people kind of trying to graduate to the higher end of keys. But you know, eventually pugging has its limitations. You can only pug to a certain extent, right? And for the people who are trying to get to the next level where you are right now, doing the biggest keys in the world, thinking back on your experience, right, when you first started pushing hard in Mythic Plus, like how do you make the leap from being a pug, you know, kind of superstar tank to really having a team and just competing for the biggest kind of keys? What advice would you give people who want to make the jump?
I think my story will be similar to majority of people's stories in High Mythic Plus. And that is, I was a pug hero. Like I in BFA, in BFA, I go up in the LFG, queue for the highest queue possible, you know, and then wait until I get accepted. And you kind of keep going through that, you know, that little dance of like jumping from group to group to group. And then eventually, if you do enough pugs, you'll start becoming, I think the progression is you're a pug tank, you're a fill tank for teams, and then you are either you make a team with the people that you've met through the fill, or you become the replacement for whatever person that got benched because of you, right? Because whether you did better or you did not, right? And that was kind of my progression. Pug tank was a fill because that person was away or couldn't play that day or week, and then became like a team member into making my own teams, right? And this is kind of the whole networking situation as well, because when you're a pug, you should just kind of invite anybody you think has a positive mental attitude, someone that you enjoyed playing with, or someone you thought is really good, especially with like the Blizzard bump into the friends list to like 200 now. No one can be the excuse of, oh, sorry, I don't have enough space on my friends list, right? Nobody has 200 friends that they actually play the game, man. So, you know, always add people that you like, always play with people that you enjoy. And then you will kind of slowly make that jump from progression from pug play into group play. And always be like, even if you're not a confident person, just like kind of extend your hand, you know, because people, I would say that everybody in High Mythic Plus right now, unless you're like a really dedicated team, they're looking for teammates. Like I talk to people who are all within the title range. I would say like 50 to 70% of them all actually don't play with a group. They're all pug heroes as well. And they're all looking for somebody who kind of will either take them on, or they still act like subs into, well, oh, well, person isn't here today, so we need a fire mage fill, so come fill for our team. And that's how they get all their IO,
yeah,
right? Like you just have to build that connection and build that network, because people are always going to be looking for that tank, that evoker, that healer to sub for their team. And then, you know, if you do really well, maybe they're like, you know, sorry, buddy. this guy's been really good. He's in the owning with us, so yep. you probably can't come in this week. You know, like, yep. and then you kind of fill their role, and it just kind of happens that way. It's like a job. You know, if someone does a way better job, unless they've been playing for years, you'll probably end up filling their role.
So we'll put a pin into that because I really want to get your thoughts on like being benched and being a filler tag, and we'll come back to that. But before that, you also mentioned something interesting, which is, you know, when a lot of people start out, they jump from group to group, hunting IO, and a lot of times they only queue for keys that gives them score. From someone that has been doing keys at the highest level, like, is that kind of attitude healthy? Because I feel like a lot of people, they sit around and they just AFK and refresh and wait for keys. But what's your take? Like, is the fastest way to improve just smashing keys regardless of whether they give you score? Or should you be tactical about, you know, looking for keys that kind of give you a score? We'd love to kind of get our thoughts around that.
There's like twofold, right? If you want IO is one answer, and if you want to get better, it's another answer, right? Like IO is, okay, let's look at IO. If you want IO, then obviously you can sign up for all the highest keys. But in the most cases, all the pug keys, they won't take you unless you already have completed that queue.
Fair enough.
So it's kind of like that job, like, you know, how do I get an entry level job without having experience, right? It's kind of like that. Yeah. This entry level job requires 4 years of experience. How the hell am I going to get that, right? And then like it's just like back and forth, like it's really weird, right? And like if you really want to chase IO, yeah, you can sign up for the highest keys, but you really just got to kind of build the key, right? You have to find a group that usually you want to find like a 4-man team who's really kind of established, join that group. And if they're doing like their homework key and they find you're doing really well, they will then let you, you know, go on the higher key and you'll push together. And that's how you become like, you know, a good substitute for them. But if you're looking to improve as a player, it's more consistent that you do a lot of keys within that range. Let's say like I think they're like brackets, right? Like there are the people who do like the 20 to 25s, the 25s to 30s, and then the people who do like the 30s and beyond, right? And if you're someone who is in the 25 to 30 range, you want to practice keys that all within that kind of level, right? Because you don't want to do keys where you won't die, right? Doing 20 won't really help you be better in like a 29, right? And same instance, like doing, if you're a 30 plus customer, like 25, 20 to 28 is like warm up, like they don't really, you can mess up as many times as you want, it won't really get you a better player, right? You need to constantly be in range of I'm scared, I'm gonna die, but you also need to be able to play in the range of even though I'm not gonna die, how would I play this if I was in the 30, right? Like I would use my defensive here, I would do this, because consistency is key, right? Like when I go into a key, I know almost exactly everywhere I'm going to use every CD. Like I know, okay, 2 minutes are here, 2 minutes are here, 2 minutes are here, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 3 minutes. I know exactly where I'm going to hit meta every single time. I know every time I'm going to hit like Silent Sigil. You want to have a plan and just be consistent no matter what key level you're doing. Obviously, if you're doing lower, you can be like, oh, this pull is pretty easy. I could probably pull like both together, but just be consistent on how you're running, how you're using your cooldowns so that when you're in the hardest difficulty of the key, you've already done it like, you know, 50, 20, or like, you know, 100 times.
Yeah. All right, so let's go back to earlier what we put a pin in, and it is being kind of like people's filler tank. Sometimes being benched by your team because they found another tank to play with. And it's not just tanks, right? It could apply to healers and DPS. What's your mentality to that? Because high M plus, you know, the pool is really small. People all kind of know one another. So how do you manage that strange tension of sometimes we just want to play, but my healer is not here, so I'm just going to get a healer. And sometimes the healer just turns out better than your current healer and you kind of just replace that. How do you deal with that awkward tension in that dynamics? Yeah.
It's tough. No, for sure. It's tough. In my past, a couple of times I've had to bench a couple of friends, and that's the worst one when you have to bench a friend, like, you know, either they're not performing as well or they're not playing as well, things like that. And it's kind of how naturally happens, right? Because although you are all friends, you're all trying to have a good time, it is a competitive format, right? You are trying to play at the best of your ability. And if you're not playing or at the status quo as everyone else, you're going to fall behind and eventually kind of get replaced, right? And it's something that's uncomfortable for everybody. Like from the team leader perspective, it is very uncomfortable benching your friend or benching your teammate. At the same time, being the guy who's come in, like I've been in the guy who's come in and replaced the tank before in previous teams, right? And that's awkward, right? Because that old guy, he hates you.
Yeah, he does.
Like, no matter what, he hates you, right? Yeah. Like you're a sourpuss or whatever the circumstance. But you just kind of, you move forward, you understand that it's a competitive format, that you are replacing somebody's role because they weren't up to snuff, and it's what the team as a whole kind of wants. Mm. And yeah, you're going to kind of hurt feelings on the way, but don't be kind of cutthroat about it, right? Like, just be honest and open, and people kind of understand. If people kind of get upset, it is something that they're just going to be upset anyways.
Right.
So you just got to kind of tell them and, like, you know, help them through the situation. I've had very awkward conversation. I've done the terrible thing of also, like, kind of just switching somebody out and doing it. I feel guilt to that day of, right, like, you know, benching those kind of people and then not really, like, explaining to them too much. But I would say the best advice is just be honest with them. Let them know what's going on so that they can make the best decision going forward for them as well, because they're going to be looking for another team. They're going to be looking for, you know, other opportunities. Just be open with them. Tell them what's going on and, like, why that situation is. And in the end of the day, as long as you don't burn bridges, you can always come back to it, right? Like, I've not played with somebody because I had to kind of remove them from the team or move on from them. And then, like, three seasons later, I was like, hey, man, you want to start a team up together? Like, you know, we're good friends. Like let's just, like, hang out. Or in the end of the day, they can also become the fill, right? They become the fill whenever that person, new person, isn't around. So don't burn bridges. Just be honest with people. And in the end of the day, do whatever is best for you, your team, and your friends. If your goal is to have fun, just play with the people that you enjoy having with, right? If your goal is to become super competitive, then you're going to have to, you know, step on some hearts along the way, but do something that, as long as everybody is on the same page. And that's something I always do at the start of my season, is I'll sit down with my, like, team of five, and I'll be like, hey, okay, let's discuss, what are your goals? And I'll go to my healer. What is your goal? What is your, like, I talk to my DPS. I talk to each one of them individually and as a group so that we're all on the same page. And I specifically have to do this whenever I'm trying to be a prot warrior main, because I go, look, I know we won't be able to do, like, number rank one keys in the world because I'm playing the off meta thing. Are you okay with this? If you're not okay, let's hash it out now and, like, let's move on now, because I don't want to go down, like, 3-4 months down the line and be like, oh man, you're not playing meta. I'd rather play with another group. No, I'd rather, you know, be upstrung. Like I'm trying to be rank one in my category. And that's, like, if you're okay with that, we'll still do, like, some of the highest keys, but we just won't be able to do the highest key in the world. And as long as everyone's on the same page at all times, you'll never really have a problem, right?
Dude, that's really good advice. I'm not saying this to patronize you, but I feel like that's so underrated. The idea about sitting down and just aligning expectations way ahead of time, rather than waiting for something to blow up just because you guys didn't talk about it. I think that's really solid advice. Speaking of solid advice, and it's also along the same lines, right? Which is about the idea of expectations. You've done, you know, the world's highest keys, and I sometimes see you on stream and you're just really calm. And I just want to ask, there are definitely moments of tension where you guys mess something up. How do you deal with tilt in your team, right? Like, on bad days, what goes through your mind? How do you think about that?
Oh, that's just being old. I'm old and jaded. Okay, I used to be
that helps.
A rager. Okay,
really? I couldn't tell, but okay.
Oh my God. If you put me in, you watch me in Plunderstorm right now, oh, that rager kind of comes out here and there. I will be mad as hell. But it's something that jaded. I think in BFA, I was, like, very angry. Whenever I'd mess up, I'd be upset when people messed up. And I'd kind of, like, go to, like, I'd get off, like, stream or get off, like, the key and be like, oh, I'm so mad. This guy is so dumb. This guy is such an idiot. Nowadays, like, I've kind of realized that, you know, nobody's trying to make a mistake. No one's trying to mess up. And everybody's trying to time the key. If they forgot, well, they just forgot. You know, it is like, okay, it sucks. You just kind of go again, right? And that's kind of the highest keys. You just kind of have that mentality. The people who rage the most, they aren't the most successful. All the top teams, they're people who they fail more than they actually time, right? Like, that's just the nature of high keys. You're going to hit a point where you are failing probably 80% of the keys, but you're all hunting for that juicy IO, that juicy feeling of, oh, we timed it. Thank God. I've been in hell for like yesterday. I did six or seven Everblooms, right? At 30. And we failed all of them. But we learned something every single time. And that's what the important thing is, right? You learn something every single time. And the people who are doing the number one keys in the world, they aren't going there and one-shotting them,
right?
They're failing, but they're not tilting. And that's, like, super important. You have to understand that you're going to fail. You're going to be bad. And you don't want to rage on people because in the end of the day, they're also trying to have the same goals and there's no point.
Yeah.
What is raging on them going to do for you, right? Are you going to feel better? No, you still failed the key. Are they going to feel better? No. And if you yell at them, they're not going to do better,
right?
People don't respond well to being yelled at or being like told off. If you understand what they're going through and you kind of be empathetic to them, you will feel better if like you will try to not make the mistake if you feel disappointed. I think my mom really instilled this into me when I was very young. When my mom yelled at me, I was like, well, you know, whatever. I don't give a crap. You know, I'm too cool for this. The first time my mom like cried and was like disappointed in me, oh my God, that hit home so bad, like much worse than any of the time they were mad at me. Once she was disappointed in me and sad, like seeing your parent or your mom cry was like, oh my God, I felt so terrible. And I never did it again. Similar to Mythic Plus, you know, if you yell at them, they're just going to be like, well, I don't care. I'm just mad too. But if you were like, oh, you know, it sucks, you know, they're disappointed, but we go again, they will try extra hard the next time to not mess it up. Because they don't want to let you down. They don't want to let the team down. And they want to just be successful in the long run, right? And that's the kind of mentality you need to be. You need to not really be a tilt and you need to kind of press on. But, you know, it's okay to feel upset. It's okay to feel angry, right? But don't take it on other people. And if you need a moment, you know what? The best thing you can do sometimes is take, okay, you know, I need 5 minutes. I need 10 minutes to just take a breather in between this key and we'll come back at it, right? And that's kind of how we form my group today is that no one really tilts. We don't really tilt. We don't yell at each other. Nobody gets angry at each other. And if we do get to that point, I'm just like, hey guys, let's take like 5 minutes, let's take 10 minutes and like we'll come back to it and be more level-headed because that's how you're going to get better. It's not yelling at people, but it's understanding people from all perspectives.
Right. And that's good advice. Again, not patronizing you, but I felt that was kind of inspirational because people would kind of see like, oh, that's how the highest keys are done amongst a coordinated group. It's not this park experience of being toxic and yelling at one another. And I think that's, yeah, a lot of people have this impression like keys at the highest level are kind of like, it's intense and, you know, it could blow up any moment. But speaking about bad things happening, right? Let me paint a scenario to you because you are obviously, you take a leadership role in your team. And let's say it's push week. It's the first day you guys all log on and you smash keys, right? And it's the first day and everything goes wrong. Like you can say doing, you know, your Everblooms yesterday and you failed all six of them and nobody gets score on the first day. But you guys have all the keys that you need to reroll, right? And you need to push it up again. And that feeling of having to do that, it doesn't give score. Like, how do you manage that, you know, the emotional state in your team where you feel, you can sense that everyone's morale is down, right? But as someone leading the team, what goes through your mind when everyone's like not saying anything in Discord and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, no, as team leader, especially, your goal is to make sure that everyone is being able to perform at their best and having a good time. And that's something that whenever you're doing a homework key, that's a key that doesn't give score, you want to be, like, obviously you need to focus on the key to not mess up, but make sure you're having a good time. Like, talk about other things, like, have fun, make jokes, like, try to do whatever it takes to bring up the morale, right? Because, yeah, you messed up the key, you messed it up. Maybe you've done it for the third, fourth time, you know, and you've still messed up in one way or another. But try to find ways to lighten the mood, right? Like for us, you know, we poke fun at each other. We never poke fun of it if something that someone's really disappointed at. But I'll be like, oh man, Ludi, like, which is my healer. I was like, Ludi, man, don't get hit by balls again. Oh, are you gonna forget to heal Chromie again? You know, you're just jokingly, just like have fun with each other, right? Because if you're grueling through every single key and like just on mute, you're just not gonna have a good time. Like your goal is to, like, morale is super important for timing high keys. If you're in a bad state, you're not going to be able to time the highest keys because you're going to make more mistakes on tilt. You're going to make more mistakes when no one's talking, and communication is super key. So just find ways to bring up the team morale by whether you're making jokes, doing fun things. Even wiping can be fun. Wiping can be fun if you're doing it in such a way where you're not like purposely inting the group, but like, you know, you're pulling big or let's try different things. Right. Let's toss it up, make it interesting, right? Ultimately, yeah, it's tough, but morale is super key. Find ways to make it better. And if that is, you know, having fun with it, making jokes, like doing other things, even like other than Mythic Plus sometimes, that's just what you have to do in order to kind of bounce back.
Yeah. And let's say you guys have done your homework keys and you finally got the key that you wanted to do because you routed it out, you saw it on the vaults, and you kind of mapped it out for your team. But obviously, it's the first time you're doing the key level. But you guys know it's doable, right? Like, you know exactly what you guys need to do. However, in the moment of the key, like, you know, let's say things don't go according to plan. What I'm trying to ask is, there are times in a key where you need to take risk. And, you know, a lot of good tanks, they kind of say, like, you need to take risk in order to learn where the limits are to a pool. But the idea of taking risk in a key also means that, you know, there's a chance that the key just dies at the moment. And sometimes the team might feel like, why did you do that? Why did we have to take that risk? You know, if we played it safe, we could have timed it. It would be close, but we could have timed it. Why take the risk? But then I've also heard other top players say that if you don't take risk, you'll never learn. So how do you think about that tension, getting score versus taking risk in a key?
Firstly, I try to separate it a little bit. One is I will always try to take more risk in homework key, right? So let's say I'm looking to try to time a 30 fall. In the 29, 28 fall, I'm going to play it like I played the 30, but like, okay, so let's say we have low on time. I tell my team, okay, straight up, look, we're going to two chest this key. So I'm going to risk the two chest because I want to see how this pull would play out if I had to do it on the 30. And we have contingencies. I already have contingencies throughout every key is if we're behind on time. And I know we're behind on time because of timestamps, right? I know that I have to kill Oakheart in DHT by like 17, 18 minutes on like Tyrannical, for instance, in order to time that key. I had to kill like the first boss in DHT by the 9-10 minute mark, or else like we're really behind, right? And if we are behind, you don't give up, right? I think the worst part is that people go, oh, we're at the first boss, we're a little behind, we're screwed up. I'd rather int a key by taking that risk than not just leaving and trying again on a lower difficulty, right? Because you need to see it. Like, whether you're a tank, you're a healer, or you're a DPS, you need to see the key and have reps on it in order to kind of have an issue. But yes, you do need to take risks. I am the full, I am a full enjoyer of, you know, if we're behind, we need to take this risk, and we need to, even though it may look impossible or like very difficult, you might as well try it, right? Because you're not going to time the key. But that is with the respect that you really understand the pacing of a key. If you go and you pull something because you think, oh, we're behind, but you're actually not behind, then you're going to have an issue, right? Especially if it's an IO key, you want to rather play on the safe side. And if you fail the key by like 1-2 seconds, well, it happens sometimes. You brush it off, you go again, right? But taking risk is something you just kind of have to do. Yes, it feels worse in a keystone that where you can get potential IO, but you have to do it sometimes. But like most of the time, I do recommend, you know, if you're going to try to time a 30, try to also have 29 of that key, right? And do 29 into 30. Or if you have a 31 and a 30, but you're trying to time the 30, do the 31, even though you have no, like you really don't think you have a chance of doing it, run through the entire key and then run it on 30, right? Because then you know exactly what you're doing and you've had the rep to do it. Also, never do a key on reset day. No matter how good you are, everybody sucks at Sanguine, on Storming, on Bolstering, on day one, because nobody is like used to the Apex. Even though you just did it like 2-3 weeks ago, everyone sucks. You're almost never going to get real IO on day one. Focus on IO by the Sunday, the Saturday, the Friday. That's where you get the big gains, because you got to kind of let people get used to it all over again.
Great advice. And you mentioned affixes, and I would love to get your thoughts on affixes, because this is something that, you know, I had a great time talking to Alex May about it. Very strong opinions. Looking forward into, you know, the War Within, if you had a magic wand and you can change anything you want about Mythic Plus, let's talk about affixes only. What would you change about affixes? Like, yeah, I'll leave it as an open question.
I can see the people argument who like, you know, get rid of affixes, whether it's like get rid of the Tyran 4 or get rid of all affixes and let's play the dungeon. Personally, as a working adult, I don't mind the off weeks. You know, you got to get the weeks that are really good and you can go hard. And then you get the other weeks where you can spend time with your wife and family and work, but you still play a little bit just to keep the reps up. Personally, I don't mind it. Obviously, I hate certain affixes, like Sanguine can jump off the Titanic. You know, I do not want to ever play Sanguine on any week. It's awful. But Aphexis, I do like the fact that Aphexis change it up every week. Mm-hmm. You know, you do have to pull a little bit differently. You have to approach it a little bit differently. Some classes are just better in other weeks than others. And I think that's healthy for the game. I think if you want to push like all the time and you have nothing, like, and WoW is your job or WoW is like your main focus all the time, you can see it as a huge negative, right? Because like some weeks it's just like awful. Why am I playing this game? But in overall, I think it's healthier for the game to have changes week by week than it is to not have it. I think some Aphexes are definitely can be worked around, more people being able to do it. Let's say Afflicted, if you don't have a dispel. Like I don't mind Afflicted or the whatever the CC one is, right, because I'm a prop warrior and I can't handle either of them. I'm just like, good luck, you guys deal with it, not my problem. I don't mind it, but it's definitely worse for the key perspective. Yeah. But like as long as there's more balancing around it, I think it'll be fine. I think having Aphexes is fine for the game, just make them certainly less punishing. I think in general, people have enjoyed a lot of like the kiss, like the kiss curse kind of aspect of like, you know, you do this, it's hard, but then you get a huge benefit and you can change the route because of it. This is like if encrypted, how you kill those three balls, you can pull really differently throughout the key, or like, yeah, again, any of those kind of Aphexes are fine as long as there's kind of like a upside. I would like to see a lot more of like, if you don't do it well, you get negatively affected, but if you do it well, you get a positive. I would love to see that more in the Aphexes. But in general, I think it's something that should still be in the game in order to make it fresh and innovative every single time. Right. And I personally, I do enjoy it, other than Sanguine. Sanguine can go to hell.
Okay, cool. Got it. Okay, so that's one big debate. The other big debate is Keystone depletion. Should keys deplete? That's the other question. We'd love to get your thoughts.
I think if keys don't deplete, you're all playing the MDI. And okay. I don't think like people want that, but I feel like maybe they don't know that they really don't want that, because then timing the highest keys becomes how much time in your day do you have to attribute to playing the video game, right? And like you'll have no chance or disparity in order to compete with the teams who can practice like 8 hours a day. And it makes the disparity harder. So I'm on the edge of I play less because I can only have like, I can only play like maybe like 3 hours a day if at most. And then we always have to take like 2 break days. So maybe at most on the push week, I can get something like 15 hours of playtime, which is a lot for a lot. Some people, like that's a lot, right? But from the high end perspective, that's quite low.
Yeah.
Right. In the like the people who are pushing 8 hours a day plus. And so like for me, having key depletion is helpful for me because I can compete with everybody else because you're more on a playing, same playing field. At the same time, I understand that if you have a lot of time that you want to just practice stuff and have fun, then no key depletion is the way to go, right? Because you don't that is what you want to do. You want to play it like nonstop, you can go for it. Having key depletion kind of makes their stakes, right? Yeah. So you can play poker without having any money on the line. Fair and you enough. Can have fun. You can play poker. But if there's no money on the line, I'm just going all in. Yeah. I just go all in. Every single pull, I'm just going
That's
all in.
That's a great analogy. Because
it doesn't matter, right? But when you have stakes, it makes you play smarter. You think of it more innovatively. How can I make sure that I worry about everybody else? Because, you know, something on the line every single time. So I feel like people will play better or play like with that into mind, safety. It's kind of like when you also when you're playing hardcore. Like if I'm playing hardcore Diablo or hardcore WoW, right? If there's no depletion, you just pull everything, you die, who cares? But if there's stakes on the line, you're going to play better, you're going to play safer. And I think it's better to have key depletion, even though some people may not like it. It makes the game where there are stakes. And even if you don't like stakes, you know, like it's just something that's healthier for the game.
I've heard a lot of answers to this, and I think your poker analogy is the best. Honestly, I think that is the cleanest way to kind of explain what stakes are in keys depletion, and that's absolutely great. But I picked up on something when you responded, and you talked a bit about how, you know, you're a working adult, you know, you have a family, and you know, sometimes your playtime is limited, and so sometimes you appreciate like some off weeks to spend time with the family. But let's talk about that, because again, you are always kind of on top of the leaderboards. And how do you do it? Like, it means that you have to be super efficient with your playtime, the time that you spend with your team. So what's your mentality like? As someone that has a job and then like you've got balanced family, what's your mentality like whenever you spend time in this game?
Scheduling and efficiency, right? I think a lot of some teams just go like, oh, when can you play next, or what do you do next? Like, and they just kind of go on the fly. When push week comes around, I already have a schedule built out of like, okay, we're playing this time to this time. I message all five people. For some reason, it's my responsibility to herd all the cattle every single time and be like, can you play this day? Can you play this day? Play this day? And I have it all mapped out so that I can like I don't want to neglect any part of my life, right? Like, I have work, I have my family, I have to eat. Like, I have to, like, everything scheduled, like, super, like, hardcore. Like, even let's say today, right? Today is push week. Like, this is the middle of push week. I have 11 to 12:30. I have scheduled with Quasi, you know, GG, the best podcast in the world.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
12:30 to 1 o'clock, I'm eating lunch. 1 o'clock until 7, I'm doing keys. My team is waking up at 1 o'clock. They're all degens. They're waking up at 1 o'clock. But that's fine because I already have that scheduled, right? If you have a lot of things going on in life, it's all about like making sure you schedule it appropriately and just try to not like last minute things or trying to figure it out. Like, I try to make sure that my wife is always happy. You know, I make sure I set a goal time to do with her. Like, for instance, like Friday, I never try to push keys on Friday because that's date night. So no matter if it's push week or not push week, I make sure that I'm trying to spend Fridays with my wife. And then the rest of the other days, you know, I have it all kind of scheduled out so that we can push keys and make sure that people are all on time and that everyone's on schedule. And I do have to give shit to like my teammates sometimes, like, you know, they're late, they're in a key still or whatever. And it's not because I want to be a hard ass on them, right? But it's because that scheduling, I'm trying to push that scheduling matters for everybody. And whether they're really young or they're older, I think everyone appreciates like structure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, oh, I can be here at this time. I know at this time. And then they can sort out their own schedules accordingly. So if you want to be that person for your team, yeah, it does suck, but it helps you and your entire team have a better life schedule and also have a better playtime and understanding.
Yeah.
And also just making the most of the time that you do have, right? Like, yeah, I'm playing between like 1 and 4, but like, how much are you eating between that? Do you have like how many washroom breaks? How many like things do you have to do between that? No, like, try to schedule that time to be, okay, this 1 to 4 is like for this.
Yep.
And then after that, I can deal with this, right? Like, just make sure that it's all very slotted and focused rather than I'm trying to do a little bit of everything all at the same time.
Yeah. You mentioned a bit about, you know, scheduling and your team sometimes, you know, they gotta meet your schedule, right? And a lot of that goes back to their attitude and the way they view kind of their commitment to this team. I want to ask you, so there are a lot of players out there who have great attitudes, but they're not so skilled. There are people who are absolutely god tier at this game, but they have shit attitudes. And in a ideal world, we want both, right? We want people who are great attitude and great at this game. But I've heard people saying this, which is essentially you can have great attitude, but you can learn to become better. But I don't know, how is it like at the top end of like teams? Like, do they believe in that? Or rather, do they take an asshole who absolutely pumps numbers, but, you know, he's an asshole? What's your take on this?
I mean, I think if you're looking for a long-term teammate, you can, like I said, you can learn. You cannot fix attitude. Attitude is something you are with it all the way through. There's nothing you can fix. They can grow up eventually, and they can fix it on their own. But you yourself will never be able to fix them, right? So that's like, I do agree in that mindset. And like, gameplay can kind of be taught to a certain level. Like, yeah, if this person's just getting into mage, they have a great attitude, they're just getting to mage now, by the end of the season, they're probably still not going to be able to do the highest keys as that mage, right? Because they're so green. There are some amazing multi-classers out there, don't get me wrong. They can pick up something and then be best at it within that same season. And so you do have to pick up a player that is certainly versed or pretty good at their class already and has that balance of positive mental attitude and gameplay. But a lot of times, like the subs, the people who are like coming last minute, they can have terrible attitudes. But like, because they're a sub and you need somebody for the night, you just kind of deal with it. So there's a world where terrible attitude, super strong gameplay is still invited to high keys and get into IO. And then there's also the other world where you have a strong mental positive attitude and you're not the best, but you still get into high keys. There is a world where both fit. Personally, I prefer better attitude. But in the end of the day, you still have to have that minimum skill level, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have that minimum skill level, you can't time the key because of damage. You have to keep pushing that, like, you know, that gradient a little bit more and more, like the balance. You know, it's like that graph, you know? She's hot, But she's crazy, right?
Fair
she's
enough,
hot,
yeah.
Either she's crazy or she's not crazy, but then she's also not hot, right? You have to like follow that line as much as possible and see how far you can push it until you like you're at that point where you're all having fun and still enjoying the keys and getting IO.
Dude, you're dropping massive knowledge bombs. I'm telling you, my editor is like gonna have so much fun editing like this particular this episode. And thanks for the knowledge bombs. Let's kind of wrap up by talking about something a bit more fun. You know, I have seen you for, you know, on stream for so long, and I always wonder, why is it that your name, you spell it as Pika, but I see it spelled as P-L-K-A. So tell us the story, like, what's going on there?
I've always respected Pikachu as a Pokemon.
Okay.
Like, growing up, that was always like, dude, that thing owns. And that thing owns because of its perseverance. I always remember the story of Ash going to Brock's gym. He sends out a Pikachu. That guy sends out an Onix. And he's just like, I'm going to win this shit. Right? Like, he's like, oh my God, I'm a Thundershock Onix. Onix doesn't take damage. Ash is like, well, I'm going to Thundershock it again. And he just keeps Thundershocking it. And eventually it hits the sprinkler. And for some reason, that makes Onix weak against Thunder. It does not make sense. But you know what? What I learned from that is that you never give up, right? Mm-hmm. You persevere. No matter how hard it is, no matter how like unspeakable the odds are, with hard work and determination and effort, you can accomplish kind of like anything, right? So Pikachu has always kind of been like my driving factor in the back, as you can kind of see, like, yeah, from here and like from here, you know, all around. I respected that, even though it's like, it doesn't make sense at all. So like Pikachu is kind of like my name, and I wanted Pikachu, but I don't know why Pika or Pikachu is taken on every server. I think it's like a licensing thing. They don't allow the people to have that name no matter what. Even on new servers, I'm like, oh, I'm going to put Pika, and it won't even let me do that. Whether like some bot is taking it infinitely, I just couldn't do it. And I used to always do like P1KAC11U as like my handle for Pikachu, but you can't do numbers in WoW. So I was like, oh, P-L-K-A-C, like L-L-U. And that was like too long. So I was like, I just pick it P-L-K. And I get crap from this all the time because people are like, oh, it's Plucka. Yeah. Oh, it's Plucka TV or Polka TV. And they're like telling me about how, oh, he loves polka music or something. And I'm like, oh my God. But no, it's just because I tried to get Pika. I couldn't do it. So I found another way to persevere. And I also hate, you know, those people who use like special characters.
Yeah, special characters. Do, like, an, and you still have to invite them, dude. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're like so hard. It's like, I'd rather just message this person, look, it's P-L-K-A in capital letters so they can see what it is, rather than, oh, P, and then you have to do Control-Shift-9321 in order to get the character. No, this is just way easier, way better of doing it. And I am Pika, but you want to call me Plucka, that's fine. All good.
Dude, that's such a good story, dude. And it's very anime-ish vibes. But, you know, big respect. No, because I kind of feel like, through talking to you, I feel like you're such a... You're very down to earth, but I think I can start to see the reason why you succeed. And, you know, you have limited playtime compared to maybe a lot of the professional tanks who play full-time. And you're doing well. And I can start to see why, because you're dedicated and you work hard. And I think that's something that a lot of people can learn from. So... on that note, let's kind of talk about just shout-outs, right? Like, any last shout-outs you'd like to give to your viewers, your fans? Also, where can people follow you? You have, you know, taught us a lot in this episode, honestly. And I'm not saying, again, this to pacify you, but I think you're very real and a lot of people benefit from that. How do people follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitch, YouTube, or X, Twitter, you know, .com/PL. KATV. You know, you can find me on there. I do guides all the time, whether it's a Mythic Plus or for Raid. I stream on Twitch, usually nightly, especially during push weeks, all the time. If the content is bad, you'll see me on every other day, something like that. But yeah, you can find me there. I want a huge shout out to my guild, Nascent. You know, they provided me with a ton of ability to do high Mythic Plus, whether it's through Mythic Plus gear or just generally getting into hardcore kind of play. Give shout out to my team, you know, Andrew, Ludi, Toladin, you know, Learntrell, all the people who played with me in this season. You're fantastic. I love you guys. You guys are awesome. And yeah, a huge shout out to Quasi. You know,
Thank you.
Makes waves, you know, in YouTube, in WoW. This guy is amazing. What a gamer, what a player, what an owner, the champion himself. Quasi, thank you so much.
Thank you, dude. That's very kind of you. And I know it's push week, so I'll kind of let you go here. But like I said before we started the podcast, and I know you sometimes come to my part of the world, I will buy you a beer. Honestly, this is one of the best conversations I had. And it's not just because I'm trying to upload a video to YouTube. It's kind of real. And I really appreciate all the very real advice. And we'll definitely have you on back for the show. I guarantee you, because you're such a, you're a great entertainer as well. I can see why so many people, you know, kind of tune into your stream. So yeah, thank you so much for your time. I know it's push week, so I'll let you go. All the best for Score this week, and we'll catch you again. Thanks, speaker.
Awesome.
See you soon. Take care, guys. That wraps up the episode. If you're looking for the uncut, unedited, and ads-free version of the podcast, everything is available for our Patreon subscribers. And speaking about our Patreon subscribers, thank you to all the patrons that you see on screen. Thanks for making this podcast possible. If you're looking for more high-end M+ World of Warcraft player interviews, you can check out the video in the middle of the screen that features Alasmir, one of the top M+ healers in the world. I'll see you in the next episode.